Hey guys, I'm Eric Greitens, Navy SEAL and host of Actionable Intelligence. Now, this episode is brought to you by Heritage Action. Heritage Action is America's leading conservative grassroots organization, as many of you know. For the last decade, they and their network of activists across the country have led the fight against the Washington establishment. Heritage Action is also sponsoring Just the News for our very first Blue Courage event, and I've been amazed at how they have stood up to support our police officers in 2020. I encourage you, please, to go out to www.policepledge.com. Check out the work they're doing to get our lawmakers to support our men and women in law enforcement. To date, Heritage Action has gotten over 500 elected officials and candidates to take the pledge. This is important because they're opposing the defund the police movement and standing up for our police officers. It's incredible work. It's so important to make sure that our representatives in government don't turn their backs on the police, but instead have the backs of our police. So every listener of this podcast, I encourage you, go out to www.policepledge.com. Check it out for yourself. You can sign the pledge and then make sure that your elected officials have signed on to. Just go to www.policepledge.com. Talk to you soon.
Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from, Just the News. You know about us. You've been reading us. We appreciate it. We love you. Thank you for that support. Thank you for reading us. Today, we're going to hop right to a very important interview. We've got Amanda Milius, the producer of the new movie, The Plot Against the President. This is the best film storytelling of the what happened in Russiagate and the Russia hoax that I have seen. It is so well done. If you haven't had a chance to go see this, watch it. It's going to a lot of local theaters in Middle America right now. It's also available on Vimeo, a must watch there. You can get it on social. There are a lot of other platforms that are popping up that are allowing this film to grow. One of them is not Amazon. How about that? Some weird censorship stuff going on there. But The Plot Against the President, Amanda Milius, she comes from Hollywood royalty. Her father was the great screenwriter and director for movies like The Red Dawn and so many other really important movies. One of my all-time favorite movies, Apocalypse Now. Remember the great line? I love the smell of napalm in the morning, from that great military officer in Vietnam. Some really awesome movies. She comes from that lineage. She served in the State Department for Donald Trump, and now she has her very first feature-length movie out, The Plot Against the President. It's based in part on Lee Smith. I show up in a lot of other characters that have been on this show, Devin Nunes, people like that, or are in the Rudy Giuliani, Mike Flynn, Don Jr., all in the movie. It's worth watching. We're going to spend most of the time with her. I'm going to go to a quick commercial break. When I come back, I want to point out a couple quick stories, and then we're going to go right to our exclusive interview with the brand new filmmaker Amanda Milius in her first feature-length film, The Plot Against the President, right after these commercial messages. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com, and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. Hey, we're working on some big stories here at Just the News. I think they will break in the next couple of days. I'm going to give you a little taste of them. First is, I've been doing some work on some new documents that were declassified, and it looks like the investigation of Paul Manafort, the president's former campaign chairman, did not start in August when all the news stories broke, but may have started 8 months earlier. And we're working on that. If that gets confirmed, and it certainly seems to be because I have FBI documents that state it so, then you might see some important questions like, if they knew Paul Manafort was under investigation in January of 2016, why didn't they tell the president when he hired him? Why didn't he get a defensive briefing in March 2016 when he hired Manafort? And did they disclose this to the defense lawyers? There are other things here. So we're working on that one. Another one we're working at, there's been a lot of buzz in the last few days, maybe the last couple of weeks, since Senator Ron Johnson, Chuck Grassley, two Senate chairmen, released their report on Ukraine, Biden, Hunter Biden, Burisma. And one of the fire points has been the Democrats yelling, there's a Russian spy, there's a Russian propagandist, his name is Andrei Telyashenko. Now, we've all talked about him on this show. We know he was actually working for the Democrats for 4 or 5 years under the Obama-Biden administration. They like this guy. They embrace this guy. They're only throwing him under the bus now. And even the State Department, the bureaucrats of the State Department, have apparently blocked his visa, and they're keeping him from coming to the country, even though his parents live here. But I got something. We're going to be able to tell you in the next couple of days what information it was that Andrei Telyashenko gave the Senate committee earlier this year that they have not made public. That's a travesty. They haven't made it public yet. What he gave that set off alarm bells among the Democrats and the liberals on these committees, why the smear campaign against Andrei Telyashenko, a guy the Democrats used to embrace and love. They were having beer and coffee with him on a weekly, biweekly basis. This was their man in the Ukrainian government at the Ukraine embassy here in Washington. They've turned on him. And we're going to be able to tell you what explosive information he provided the Senate committees that has not been made public that caused the Democrats to turn on their old Ukraine man. Coming up in the next couple of days, you're going to want to definitely see that important story. So those are two stories upcoming. Because you listen to this podcast, you get it first. We'll have those stories on justthenews.com in the coming days, and we'll probably come back on this show and talk about their import in a few days. Now, while we're doing that, there is one story that we broke this morning. It's under my byline, and it talks about how Mark Zuckerberg's $250 million grant, this is a stunning amount of money. You're talking about $250 million that Facebook's founder has given to a charity to give to election officials around the country. And we've had Daniel Payne on this show recently. He broke the story about the grant, saying, hey, there's a pattern here. It all seems to be going to Democratic enclaves, cities with big Democratic votes, and none of it seems to be going to red America. And is this right? Do we really want major billionaires in America able to influence election by paying election officials in all of these different localities? So yesterday, through the good work of the Thomas More Institute, a conservative law legal action firm, legal action group, nonprofit group, we obtained documents that have been ordered released by a federal court in Pennsylvania. And they show exactly how Mark Zuckerberg's money to the city of Philadelphia is being spent. And here's the shock. We have this liberal activist, billionaire, owner of Facebook, giving $10 million to Philadelphia, and that money is being used to pay, I'm not making this up, the very election judges that will decide whether ballots should be counted or not, the very election people receiving the ballots, facilitating the ballots, opening up new sites, the application that we got for the money. So the city of Philadelphia applies to this charity funded almost exclusively by Mark Zuckerberg. And the money that flows in delivers on a promise. The city officials have promised to grow voting in Philadelphia to 800,000 voters this election. Now, let's keep in mind, Philadelphia votes 80% Democrat. Republicans barely break 15 or 20% in that city, and there's some small parties that get in there. So the last time we had a vote in 2016, only 675,000 people voted. We're talking about a 125,000 vote growth in a Democratic enclave like Philadelphia, funded by Mark Zuckerberg and overseen by election officials who are, you're right, being paid by Mark Zuckerberg's money. Anyone see a conflict of interest, a concern that public officials, election officials, are promising a voter turnout goal, promising a number of polling sites, 800 up from 190 in the primaries, and are allowing those election officials to be paid by private money. So all of this, these documents are in public. You can go see this story. Don't have to take my word for it. Go look at the documents. The court ordered release. We had them first at justthenews.com. That story's there. I think this is an important election integrity issue. We hope you do too. Read the story. Take a look at what the city officials promised. Take a look at what Mark Zuckerberg's group is demanding of the officials, and you decide. Is this the form of democracy we want? Maybe we do. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe growing vote, no matter where it is what you want. But should wealthy billionaires be allowed to buy this access, buy these results? And I'm not talking about buying votes saying Democrat, but to buy guarantees that 800,000 people must show up or you don't get your money, or 800 polling places must be opened or you don't get your money. Because that's what the contract says. When you look at the letter giving the money, the charity says we can withhold our money or ask for you to refund it if you don't hit your promised goals. Take a look at this. You decide. Talk about it with your friends. That's why we write stories like this, not only to write them, but to give you the raw documents, the raw videos, the raw audio, and let you make up your own mind. We report, you decide. We inform, we don't indoctrinate. We hope this story about election funding catches your fancy and you get a chance to talk about it with your friends and you decide if this is something that scares you or excites you. Maybe you find this a good idea. All right, we're going to go to that commercial break one more time. Remember, we love our sponsors and advertisers. They make the show. They make Just the News possible. Support them every way you can. I do. I just bought some new stuff from MyPillow. I just bought some new Kansas City steaks. I'm setting up my Simply Safe security system at my cabin. I love these products. I use my Clean Phone Pro almost every day when I get home from work. I hope you do too. If you haven't bought these products or checked out these products and services, go to the jtnshop.com, listen to the advertisers about to speak to you, support them because they make this great news organization and this show possible. Thank you in advance for even considering it. All right, when we come back from the commercial break, the new filmmaker, Amanda Milius, and her first feature-length film, The Plot Against the President. You're right, the deep state plot against Donald Trump and the Russiagate scandal brought to the big screen by this enormous, famous, successful filmmaker in Hollywood. She's starting a second generation in the Milius family. We're going to talk to Amanda Milius in a few seconds, right after this commercial break. Folks, eat stress-free this spring. How? With Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's great for a busy person like me. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your Springtown goals. Why do I use Factor Meals? Well, it's real simple. I'm busy, but I want to eat healthy. And if it only takes you 2 minutes, I'm all in on healthy eating. And the best part is that Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you got to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. I love asparagus. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50 and use the code justnews50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That code, one more time, is justnews50 at factormeals.com/justnews50. What are you going to do? You're going to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's a great deal. One more time. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50. Use the promo code justnews50 for half off your first order. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as I promised, a very special guest, the producer of the brand new movie, The Plot Against the President, Amanda Milius, joins us. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, congratulations. Your movie is all over the place. I go down the street and people say, did you see that movie you were in? And I said, yes, I did. That's so awesome.
That's good.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being a part of it. I think we held you hostage for several hours, and it's a good thing we did.
I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Because your interview was so, so important. I told you when I ran into you that when we were trying to edit it down from 4.5 hours to 90 minutes, frequently we were like, well, we've got to fit this really complex topic into 2 seconds. And it was like, go to Solomon's bin. Let's see if he talks about it.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you did a marvelous job. And there were so many great voices in the movie. And you took something so complicated and you made it really simple. You tied it all together. It's a real masterpiece of film and of storytelling and of, I think, public service too. Now, I want to introduce you to our audience because you come from a little bit of Hollywood royalty. You did some public service yourself at the State Department and elsewhere, and now you got this great movie. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to grow up with your dad, John, one of the greatest screenwriters in Hollywood history.
Well, it was unique. My dad is John Milius. He wrote and directed a lot of very popular movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He wrote Apocalypse Now. He directed and wrote Red Dawn, which is becoming sort of the movie. It's got a real nostalgic moment right now.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
People are having a Red Dawn moment.
Absolutely.
Which is great. It's one of my favorites. And Conan the Barbarian and Wind in the Lion and a lot of great,
great
things that people on our side really like. I noticed in L.A. and Hollywood, you'd get way fewer people kind of, they knew who he was at my film school and stuff, obviously, and in the industry. But
right. You
didn't get people coming up to you saying, oh, my God, your dad made my favorite movie. That only started happening when I moved to D.C.
No kidding.
Yeah, because when I met Newt Gingrich, actually, he was like, I love Wind in the Lion. I've memorized it. It's my favorite thing. So I got him a signed script of that for Uncle Newt there.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's very cool. Because, I mean, obviously my dad respects these guys so much. And he's very right wing. And that was very weird in Hollywood. People didn't. There was definitely a tension between his politics and Hollywood, but it wasn't like it is now. If it was like it is now, he never would have had a job at all, or he would have his politics to himself.
Isn't that amazing to think? All these great movies that wouldn't have been made in the cancel culture of 2021. Wow. Crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I can't even believe that he kind of made it through as much as he did. I mean, they did pretty much cancel him after Red Dawn, because it was his most, I think it was his largest box office movie.
Right.
And yet he didn't really write he didn't really direct again or have anything of, I think he did Flight of the Intruder
right. In
the 90s, which is, I thought no one saw that movie, but apparently it's really big for the Navy, which is great. So there, I've only realized that out here.
Everybody loves it.
Yeah. So that's good.
Niche audiences. Important niche audiences. That's important.
Yeah. That's a huge audience. Well, that's kind of what I'm doing, which is just I'm foregoing. I just don't care about the Hollywood audience at all. So I'm just going to do the DC thing make movies here. I don't have any interest in winning over Hollywood because it's just not I just don't care about them. And he didn't really either. You know, and I think I learned a lot from him in that way, which is just don't care what people think about you and certainly don't care what they say about you. And that's a pretty good lesson to learn when you're really young. And it allows you to think for yourself and not go along with the people around you. You know, I don't know otherwise. How did I grow up in LA and I'm, to the right of Attila the Hun. I think it was a good lesson. And my mom is conservative too. You know, they're both, I think on the board of the NRA and my mom was a champion shotgun shooter.
Your mom is Celia Kay, the actress, right?
Yeah, she's an actress. And, it was definitely a stranger, more unique upbringing in the middle of liberal Los Angeles. But, you know, a lot of the best conservatives come from West Side LA. Like you've got, Steve Bannon spent a long time there.
That's right.
Andrew Breitbart, literally around the corner from where I grew up.
Yeah.
Stephen Miller. There's actually quite a lot of really hardcore conservatives from LA.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, you don't think of that until you start to do the list. Yeah, and of course there was the group Friends of Abe, right, for a long time.
That was a trip. Yeah, yeah. Friends of Abe is.
Yeah. I think Andrew was involved, and I actually accidentally outed it in a story I wrote. To that point, it had been sort of a secret, and then I accidentally wrote a story at the Washington Times that mentioned it, and they're like, "Oh my God, you outed us!" And who
knew?
That's
so funny.
So funny, yeah. What great memories. So you're going to USC. You're in the Fame Film School there. You're doing great. You have a little thesis short called Lotus Gun, and then you decide to go work for a certain real estate mogul who's running for president, right?
Yes. And I was touring my thesis film because it had gotten in about 40 different film festivals over the course of a year and a half, which is kind of what you're supposed to do. That's their traditional route,
right?
You know, to beginning a traditional film career. You go to the film school, you make, you know, your thing, and then you tour it around and see who bites. And it actually did really well, weirdly, because it was a very libertarian right wing theme buried under a couple of concepts that I think people just went along with. It was like a post-apocalyptic lesbian weed Western.
Wow.
And so, so
there's
it was
a, mix.
A little weird.
Wow.
But I got a lot of really good reviews from like outlets that probably will not give good reviews to this one. but anyway, so I was touring the movie. And then I had all this time off because I was 3 weeks in town, 3 weeks out. I wasn't doing a consistent thing. So then during my time off, I was obviously really obsessed with what was happening politically. I was supportive of the president from the escalator speech on. I mean, I loved everything he was saying. Immigration was my number one issue. I was 100% there. And so I started volunteering for the campaign in Nevada because it was the closest swing state. So I would drive out and stay in this crappy little motel and like live there for a few weeks at a time.
Wow.
And then work at the state office there. And then eventually they hired me and I was just like, I'm just going to do this. And then when we won, I thought that was it. I was like, well, you know, now I'll go back to LA. But some people on the campaign convinced me. They were like, well, you know, you should sign up to work in the administration. And I was like, that's not possible. I've never studied politics formally. Like, I have no, I don't even like the government. I don't think I should work in it, which I think a lot of Republicans say.
Sure.
And then I was told, you know, no, that's exactly the reason why you should join the administration, because we need people that believe in the president and the mission and don't have any connections in DC and don't have any reason to sell out the administration for their own agenda. So I left. I just packed up and moved to DC to an apartment that I'd never seen and just stayed for 3.5 forever.
Wow.
I never went back.
How about that? That's a transformation. And you worked at the State Department, right?
Yeah. So I got hired at the State
What was that
Department.
Like?
I mean, I wanted it because there was a point when, you know, people were joining the administration. I had somebody say to me, they're like, hey, you should come work at NASA because it's really apolitical. Nobody fights. It's just about, you know,
the mission,
space
right?
stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really chill. It's a really chill government job. And I was like, that's not what I want. I don't want to go where it's relaxed. I was like, I want to go to the heart of like the belly of the beast. Like, there's no point in me joining the administration if I'm not going to go fight for the president's policies in the hardest place that we can be in. So that was State Department. Magically I got hired. And you know, I became actually the job that I had made a lot of sense. I was the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Content in Public Affairs.
Sure, right up your alley.
Right, which is like telling the American story, explaining American policies in via content. And I don't really think there is anybody else in the administration who could do that. I don't think there are any other filmmakers in the administration.
Yeah, probably not. I can't think of any.
Yeah, so I think I happened to land in the right place. So I was in charge of that sort of department of the creatives in government, if you can imagine,
yeah.
which was pretty cool. So that was good. But then, you know, you spend, as a political appointee, you spend half your time fighting out political issues and half your time doing your actual job. I mean,
right.
The amount of time you spend fighting the swamp creatures, and not just the, you know, what you would expect, which would be like the career folks, which most of the time actually weren't, you know, the problematic ones were really problematic, but most of them are not, you know, especially in my department, not really a problem. But the people who joined the administration to subvert it, that's really where the big problems are. The bad politicals are worse than, 10 bad careers. Wow. Because they can do so much damage.
Well, there's something you don't hear every day. So the Trump administration appoints people that actually is working against it. Is that?
I mean, we've seen that all the time.
Yeah, okay, we have.
You've got the anonymous person, and then you've got... And then for some reason, especially at state, we keep promoting people who outwardly work against the president. I have no idea why some of these people are still even allowed in the building. Wow. I mean, you and I certainly know a handful of folks we won't mention, but.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a lot of things where the president would give an order and then someone wouldn't carry it out. And you wonder, well, how can that be? I mean, he's in charge of the government. The Constitution says he's in charge. And then you'd find out that his order, his wish, his instruction wasn't followed out. And I guess this explains it, right? You've got sort of two pots, right? You've got the career people, and then you've got the political people that are not on the same page as the administration. And that makes for a pretty powerful alliance. And I assume when you start to see that it worked for a while, right? You're in the State Department, what, 2 or 3 years, I think, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, 3 years.
3 years.
I mean, and the other thing, you know, that you said well in the film, which is another reason why they didn't carry out his orders, is because half of them were convinced he was a Russian asset.
Wow.
And that's the danger in doing this information warfare on the entire population, is
such
that includes
point.
Government officials, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do on this issue. And, you know, a percentage of the people that you're trying to get, that you need to pull the levers of government and make things work, are sitting there going, oh, well, I saw on CNN tonight that, you know, the president and all his people are compromised Russian assets. So I'm just going to decide, you know, I'll just do what
right.
I want to do and just carry on the last administration's policies.
Right, right, right.
And so you're fighting this massive uphill battle, and it's impossible. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody the first year I was in state. It was the craziest conversation I've ever had. Luckily I didn't have, this person didn't have any authority, really, but they were completely convinced that the administration was going to be gone within 6 months. This is the messaging that they were putting out. And if anything, it just made it impossible to govern.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, well, we just have to wait these crazy people out for 6 months and then we can do what we want.
Yeah.
And
it's running the clock.
That's so dangerous. There's nothing more dangerous.
And if you're in government, you're like, you know, you're going to give the credence of or you're going to accept the FBI's word that, oh, there's something wrong here. That's why we opened up a counterintelligence investigation. It takes three years to find out. You really shouldn't have trusted that investigation. It was a ruse. And it's remarkable.
And that was the point.
Exactly the point.
So it's they've succeeded. I mean, a lot of people are like, okay, thank God they didn't succeed.
But they already did.
And I kind of say, well, they did because we were in government. And it's actually really amazing that the administration was able to do so many accomplish so many of the things that they did, considering they were fighting with both hands the entire time, either the Russia hoax or the Ukraine hoax or, you know, whatever it was. It just made things so much more difficult.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I assume that context, seeing that play out, you know, the politicals against the president because they believe the FBI was probably right about the Russia thing.
They were just out for themselves. I mean, that's the other thing is if you hire one Bushy, which is what we talk about, they hire themselves. They'll get all their friends in government. To be fair, I'm not talking about not all Bushies, but most Bushies.
Uh-huh.
Are really terrible, and they get in government, and then they hire everybody they ever knew in Washington who've been living here for the last 10 years. And
hence
my
the swamp dynamic.
Rick Grinnell says, "What was that?"
The swamp dynamic. You bring all your friends
exactly.
in.
Yeah, exactly. And Rick says the best thing, which I think is absolutely true, which is no more people with DC addresses in the government. Like, we absolutely need people from all over the country,
real people, real America,
real people who have real jobs and who know how the economy works.
So interesting.
Yeah, that's what we need.
That's wild. All right, so you get this context, right? You're watching these sort of two layers of government, the anti-Trump political layer and the permanent bureaucracy layer. Does that give you some context to take the leap and say, I'm going to go make a movie called The Plot Against the President, which, of course, is based on Lee Smith's great movie. But how much was the experience on the inside of government influential in your decision to go make a movie like this?
Well, I think it helped in the fact that I knew a lot of the players either by either directly as actual associates and friends of mine or coworkers, or, you know, one step removed. And so I think I had the trust of a lot of the first person sources that were either featured in Lee's book or were, you know, extended folks that we added in, because they knew that I was coming from, you know, you can't fake that. Like, you can't work in the Trump administration for 3.5 years and not be pretty MAGA. I think for that reason, and then also because I made it pretty clear that I wasn't going to, no matter what, I wasn't going to sell the movie to some giant corporation and let them re-edit it and make everybody look like idiots.
Right.
So being in government, I think, helped kind of A, understand the way that government works, and also to have been somebody who didn't come from government. So I think I'm good at explaining how it works to people who aren't in DC and in government, because it's a very complicated web. It's a mess. So I think for that reason, I had a good perspective on it. And then it just kind of became, you know, not to sound too dramatic or ridiculous about it, but I think I just realized I had to do it. I don't think there's anybody else that was going to be able to do it, because there, again, there's not that many filmmakers in the administration or in on the right. Like, a lot of the films that get made on the right, which is, you know, thank God they do, we need more of them. But a lot of it is like an issue focused person who decides they want to make a movie. It's more like, okay, well, I really care about, you know, the Second Amendment, and so I'm, you know, a Second Amendment person. I'm going to make a movie about the Second Amendment, instead of coming at it from I'm a filmmaker who happens, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a film person.
You're a storyteller.
As opposed to a political person, you know, going into filmmaking, which is, you need both. There's nothing wrong with either. You need both. But I think for that reason, when the opportunity came up, I realized I really had to. Even if I didn't really want to. I mean, you know, I left my nice cushy government job at the first week of Corona or something to try and start my own business and make a movie that was going to make me the target of all of the people that just tried to take down the president. So I was like, this was a little bit of a crazy idea, but you know, it needed to happen. It worked out. I'm amazed we got it done in time. Frankly,
it was remarkable watching you in action, because you were crunching right down to the last minute. But when you when you got this done, how do you boil this down? I mean, one of the things in talking to middle America who have busy days, right? They're worried about their kids and soccer and COVID and school and work and double jobs and paying the bills. How did you boil down, and what is the boil down message, the elevator speech of what is the real storyline of the plot against the president?
Well, I would say, I mean, yeah, that's exactly why I made it, because people don't have time to put, you know, a flow chart together on their living room wall, you know, of everything that happens. And I would say it was both an offensive and a defensive maneuver by, you know, the Obama administration, the DNC, the Hillary campaign, and the intelligence agencies and the FBI. I mean, you just list the bad guys list is so long, it's not a good elevator pitch, but by the bad guys, to number one, delegitimize an administration and a president that they thought threatened their way of life and their hold on power, and B, to cover up and distract from their crimes. Because actually, I think you say it very well in the movie, which is that it is both a offensive and a defensive maneuver, this right. Russiagate hoax, because it was both an aggressive attack against the Trump administration and the president and himself and his close associates, and also a, you know, flash bomb. Look over here. Don't get any time to dig into our crimes maneuver, because it really was both.
Right. And we see more of that every day. Right now, we know since the movie was made that the CIA believed that Hillary Clinton had authorized this dirty trick to vilify Trump and to take attention away from her own liabilities with email and Russia and other things. So that storyline, which is, you know, so poignantly created in your movie, is even more affirmed now by the release of that declassified document recently. So it is Hillary playing defense to protect her own liabilities and then going on offense to destroy the president's opportunity to win the election. When he wins the election, destroy the opportunity to succeed as a president. When you have your movie is this incredible story that has a million little stories in it. What's the one anecdote that you think most explains the villainous nature of the plot against Trump? How all these forces colluded together to? Is there one anecdote that you learned in the course of this from either Lee's book or from the various witness subjects that just cements it all together for you? Just how villainous this all was.
Well, I'd say there's two. There's the most villainous thing, but also I should mention what I wish we had more time to go into, which is in the movie, which is what you told me about the poll that Hillary had done or the DNC had done that sorted out that Hillary's biggest weakness was Russia and her reset and her corruption related to Russia. And that's why no matter who the Republican candidate was, they were going to pin some kind of Russian thing on them, and that it was pre-cooked even from then. I mean, that was a pretty complicated beginning. And I wish that, again, the 4.5-hour version of the movie is going to be, which we're going to put out in a series of eight little mini series, has a lot more in those different areas that people can delve into. And that's one of the things that I think is really important. And to give you credit, that's in your book. And I talked about that last night, actually. The most villainous thing, though, I would say, is what they did to General Flynn. The fact that all of these agencies could coordinate together, from Susan Rice helping to unmask the Trump campaign officials and their daily lives that had nothing to do with Russia, all the way to the FBI agents altering the 302s, the way that they did the interview with Michael Flynn, and now the Justice Department, everything that the Justice Department did, and then even down to the judge himself refusing to let the case go. I think it touches almost every area of government, and it's not a microcosm, but it's the individual example of what they're doing to the president and the administration on a whole, which is why we use Flynn, of course, as the through line and kind of the character who goes through this entire process. He's very sympathetic, and I would say that's the worst thing to me is how what they've
remarkable.
Done to Michael Flynn.
You think about now that the analysts on the front line were worried that they needed liability insurance because they thought what they were doing would ultimately get them sued. And the lead FBI agent worried he was going to come under investigation because he kept seeing his bosses overrule or not follow the law and continue to pursue Flynn when the law said there's no wrongdoing, leave him alone. It just brings a chill up our spines to think that was inside our government and that was the crushing power of the state carrying that out.
Yeah, I hope they do get sued, and I hope they all lose their houses, and I hope that their families are destroyed, and I hope that they have to rebuild the entire agency and department from scratch. And I think that I don't feel sorry for them at all. If they were having those conversations about having liability insurance and all that, they should have said something and done something, but instead they let the integrity of their beloved institution go down the drain. And I don't mind saying really harsh things like that. You know, some people are like, well, you know, it's just some bad apples. I don't care. One of the things you talked to me about was, your story of those guys that came and talked to you and they said, these tools that the American public has entrusted us with, such as FISA, and tools like that are meant to keep us safe. And they always hide under this, ridiculous pretext of, oh, we're here keeping you safe. We can't tell you what we're doing, but it's in
Trust
your best
us.
Interest that we don't give you this information and keep you safe. I don't see how them spying on me in my phone is keeping me safe. And I don't really feel very safe with the FBI being the way that it is. And the same with the intelligence agencies. They don't make me feel safe at all. And I would feel a lot safer if they didn't exist and were rebuilt from scratch.
That's an interesting, there are a lot of people I'm talking to that feel the way. It's hard for me. I grew up in a law enforcement family. So you grew up in Hollywood. I grew up in a...
Well, my brother's a DA, so he's probably...
How about that?
Horrified.
Yeah. I grew up with eight FBI agents sleeping on our couch or DEA agents hanging out the house. And it was sort of, I grew up in this culture of blue. And yet in the course of that, it's become clear that the generation that runs these agencies and have risen to the top are not the same guys that were sleeping on my dad's couch and catching bad guys 20, 25 years ago. Somehow the culture has changed for the worse. And you're on to something that I think there's a watershed moment coming for these agencies about whether they're on the right course or so far off course that they need to be deconstructed and reconstructed. So,
well, yeah, and I want them to exist because I want sure. them to protect us from terrorists yeah. and from all of the threats that we face. But right now, America is the threats are foreign and they're also from them. Because if you're sure. a person who's got a member of the wrong political party right. and friends with the wrong people and voted for the wrong person, you are just as in danger of having your life destroyed by the intelligence agencies and the FBI as you are by any foreign actor. And yeah. so that's the end of the line.
Like an amazing thing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, and you've put it that way as well. I mean, having a false reality created about you, losing your job, losing your ability to do anything, that is destruction. Like what foreign actor is doing that, you know,
sure.
who's more likely to do that? The activists in the FBI or a foreign actor? I'd say it's pretty equal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Which is really dangerous.
I agree. These are troubling times. And, you know, it's funny. There are people on all sides of the political spectrum that can see it. They're the longtime libertarians and liberals who have had this concern about the rising growth of power and the possibility that it would be politicized as opposed to used for good things. Then you've got conservatives who long have been pro-law enforcement that watch this plot carry out. And there was a moment in the not-so-distant future where they could theoretically merge and create a cataclysmic change to these institutions. But time in this election will tell us. So as you look out, and we've got a few more minutes here, I just want to ask you this question. After all you've done in the movie and the storytelling, all you saw on the inside of government, what do you see is at stake in this election? We're 15, 14 days away from election day, 2 weeks from today. What do you see as the ultimate stakes in this 2020 election?
Well, I guess I would say, I mean, to stay in my lane regarding as the person that put the film together, I would say I'm going to try and not think about it in a partisan way, because I think that's where they've been able to pull off a lot of this hoax is to convince most of the country that if one group believes one thing, your job is to believe the opposite.
Right.
And that's what's made it so hard. So I would say what's at stake is our, as a country, connection to reality. We don't have any news sources. Our institutions are nearly destroyed, and there's going to be a lot of rebuilding that needs to happen. And I don't see that happening unless there's some major, I guess I would say, consequences for what all of these people did in the last 3 years for these various hoaxes and pretend investigations and abuses. So I would say that our entire republic is really at stake. It sounds annoying because who doesn't say that every election?
Right.
I mean, every election since I've been alive, it's the most important election. But it really is. It really is. And something has to come from this, or else they're only going to be encouraged. If they don't actually lose all their power, then why would they stop?
Great point.
They could just keep creating hoaxes, and it's practically free for them.
Becomes the new reality. I mean, this will become the new way forward. You laid out so articulately all of the wrongdoing in this movie and the misuse of power, the abuse of power.
Well, it's because I had good subjects. Yeah. There's a reason I don't interview myself.
Well, you're a great storyteller, let me tell you that. When you look at this, the we're now 2 weeks from Election Day. Nothing's going to happen at the Justice Department to any other people other than the one ex-FBI lawyer that got charged with a crime. What is the consequence of going into the 2020 Election Day without having punished the people who carried this out in 2016? How frustrated are you? And what's the long-term consequence that, at least up to this point, a lot of people got away with stuff?
I mean, we're kind of screwed, like, because no matter what happens in the election, like I said, if you don't punish these people, they're just going to keep doing it. And they're going to keep doing it to anybody. I mean, imagine the audacity of this FBI to literally, and the news outlets, after all of this has happened, after everything has been proven untrue about the various hoaxes, to go out there and say that Hunter Biden's laptop is Russian disinfo. It's almost self-parody. Yeah. I mean, someone has to have laughed when they put that together, where you're like, did they put the meth pipe in his mouth too? Like, was that a Russian ploy? What are you talking about? I mean, yeah. I'm going to start using that every time I get in trouble for anything or I do something stupid. Yep. I'm just going to say it was Russian disinfo, yeah. because apparently that's something you could do. And I mean, I mean, obviously they haven't been punished, and this is basically, we're going to live in non-reality. That's the outcome, is that we're going to be sitting here, and every single time there's any breaking news about anything, you'll never know if it's real or not, unless you personally know what actually happened. And half the country is always just going to believe the opposite.
Yeah, it's a frightening concept, isn't it? Now, you've got this great movie under your belt. It's getting rave reviews. A lot of people are talking about it. It really has become a very compact storyline to understand this very complex narrative of the plot against the president. What's next for you? How do you top this?
Well, I never thought I was going to make movies again anyway. When I left when I left LA and I moved to do politics, I really didn't expect to do a movie again. I didn't really actually want to initially, because it's a lot of work.
Right, right.
And it's really hard. And I thought I would just produce and I wouldn't direct anymore. But there was no other way to do it. This movie had to be done. I'm the only person that could have really done it. I just didn't trust anybody else. So, right now my little company is actually growing. The company 1AMDC that I created to make this movie, actually we're getting a lot of interest both on the talent end and on the project. And there's a lot of people that want a capable production company to make things that's got a taste level that I would hope is on par with more of the higher end products that are coming out of Hollywood, but sure. not with the agenda.
No.
So there's a real hunger for that, because this entire audience has not been served by Hollywood. So
great point.
We've got a lot of really good projects coming up that I'm producing, and a lot of talent reaching out to us saying, really, really, really top talent saying, yeah, like, this is what I do. I'm secretly right wing and I can't tell anybody in my industry, but I'd love to come work on this. So we've got a really amazing thing coming together. So I would say there's a lot of interesting projects on the horizon that we're already in production on. So there's going to be a lot more. I think I'm just going to cultivate this little company that I created to do this movie. Apparently,
cool,
I thought
it'd
be just one thing, but now it's going to be a lot more. So that's good.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing opportunity. Is there a Biden story in the future for you?
I think I'm going to take a break for a minute, luckily DC is really a constantly churning source for stories. So there's no end.
Why so many great television dramas have been based on DC, right? Why we had the West Wing and all.
Endless corruption and good guys and bad guys. And actually one thing I can mention is that I'm going to this winter I think I'm going to co-write a book about Hollywood and China's influence there.
Wow.
So I think that's a really important issue, and
it sure
I've seen
is.
It pretty up close. So I think that's got to get dealt with.
Wow, that's fantastic. Tell people how they can see this movie, because the Amazons of the world aren't yet embracing it. Imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be live on Amazon Prime 5 days ago, and conveniently they have told us something that our distributor says he's never seen before, and he has hundreds of titles on Amazon, which is we're under an extended content review. And I believe they're also doing that to Dinesh's movie, although I'm not sure, but I think they're, so in the meantime, what I would suggest is follow us on Twitter. Go to our website, which is www.patpmovie.com, which is Plot Against the President Movie. And we've got a Watch It Now link, which will always be updated with more platforms. Right now, Vimeo On Demand is the best place to see it.
That's where I watched it.
And Vimeo On Demand is great. It looks beautiful. And we also have two streaming platforms linked on our website that are free speech friendly. It'll never be taken down. It's a really great place for political content. And both of those platforms launched with us as their first.
What are those platforms?
The platforms are mymoviesplus.com and specialproject.io. So those are both also linked there if you want to support a free speech friendly platform. And Vimeo on demand, you can watch it on your TV, you can watch it on your laptop, et cetera, et cetera. And it's playing in theaters, actually. If you also click on our website, we're adding 5 more theaters every week. Wow. So if you want it in your town, it's playing. And we're starting with Middle America and then going out as opposed to the other way around. This is the anti-Hollywood movie. So we're starting in starting in South Dakota and going out as opposed to New York and LA and going in. So it's playing in about 8 different cities across America right now, and it grows every day. So check the link.
Congratulations.
Buy tickets.
It's a real labor of love you did, and it's an amazing story. It's told so well. It's visually compelling. It's got a great frame for a storyline. You can really understand it. Folks, if you haven't seen it, do it before Election Day. It's worth it. The Plot Against the President by the amazing, the one and only Amanda Milius. Thank you so much, Amanda, for joining us today. Let's have you back on soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, John. This was so fun.
Same here. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, that wraps up another John Solomon Reports podcast edition. I'm so grateful you're here. I hope you enjoyed Amanda's interview. She said some pretty provocative things. That quote, the one quote I'm going to remember more than any other from this show today, is Amanda saying that the political appointees that Trump appointed that were against his agenda may have been more dangerous than those that the Republicans call the deep state, the permanent bureaucracy. Think about that. There were people, she says, in the State Department she saw working against the president's agenda who got their job as a political appointees from Donald Trump, and she calls them more dangerous than even the career bureaucrats, the deep state, as Sean Hannity and some of the conservatives call them. I call them the permanent bureaucracy because they live beyond presidents and serve multiple presidents. But that's a pretty profound statement from a woman who just created a pretty impressive movie that tells the story of Russiagate like none other has told it. We're so grateful for Amanda's time today. We're so grateful you listened to the show. And yes, we're coming back tomorrow. Maybe, just maybe, we'll have someone from Congress joining us. We'll let you know tomorrow morning. Until then, check out justthenews.com and all the breaking headlines. Remember to watch our new shows on Real America's Voice, the TV network. It's on Dish Network, Channel 219, on the Pluto Network, Channel 240, on justthenews.com. You can go to the TV tab and see it there all day long. And tonight, a very, very special event. We're doing our very first special at Just the News on Real America's Voice on the website. It's called Blue Courage, a salute to America's law enforcement. You do not want to miss this incredible event tonight. 8 o'clock on our site on Real America's Voice. We're going to honor a widow of a slain police officer, and she's going to announce an amazing gift to another recently widowed wife of a brave police officer. A one-night celebration of all the great things that the men and women in blue do for us in America to keep us safe. I come from law enforcement family. My father and my brother served a total of 75 years between them. I love them and their service. I love their friends and the men and women that worked alongside them. And I hope you tonight get a chance to check out this extraordinary one-hour special called Blue Courage, exclusively from Just the News and Real America's Voice. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with more from JustTheNews.com and John Solomon Reports. Have a good night. Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon, Just the News family.